Chaz Perone listened for a splash, but heard nothing except the deep, lulling rumble of the ship's engines. Head cocked slightly, he stood at the rail as solitary and motionless as a heron. He hadn't planned to toss her here. He had hoped to do it earlier in the voyage, somewhere between Nassau and San Juan, with the expectation that the currents would carry her body into Cuban waters, safely out of U.S. jurisdiction, if the bull sharks didn't find her first. Unfortunately, the weather had been splendid during that early leg of the cruise, and every night the outside decks were crowded with moony-eyed couples. Chaz's scheme required seclusion, and he'd nearly abandoned hope when the rain arrived, 3 hours after leaving Key West. It was only a drizzle, but Chaz knew it would drive the tourists indoors, stampeding for the lobster salad and electronic poker machines. The second crucial element of his plot was surprise. Joey being a physically well-tuned woman and Chaz himself being somewhat softer and out of shape. Before luring her toward the stern of the Sun Duchess under the ruse of a starlit stroll, he'd made certain that his wife had consumed plenty of red wine. "Chaz, it's sprinkling," she had observed as they approached the rail. "Let's go back inside." From a pocket of his blue blazer, Chaz had surreptitiously removed the key to their stateroom and let it fall to the polished planks at his feet. "Oops, I think I dropped our key," he'd said, stooping to find it, or so Joey had assumed. He could only guess what had shot through his wife's mind when she'd felt him grab her ankles. "She's got to be kidding," is what she'd probably thought. The act itself was a rudimentary exercise in leverage, really flipping her backward over the rail. It had happened so fast, she hadn't made a peep. Chaz picked up the key and hurried to the stateroom, bolting the door behind him. After hanging up his blazer, he opened another bottle of wine, poured some into two glasses, and drank half of each. Joey's suitcase lay open for repacking, and Chaz moved it from the bed to the floor. He splayed his own travel bag and went foraging for an antacid. Beneath a stack of neatly folded boxers, Joey was a champion packer, he had to admit, Chaz came upon a box wrapped in tartan-style gift paper with green ribbon. Inside the box was a gorgeous set of leather golf club covers that were embossed with his initials, CRP. There was also a card, "Happy Second Anniversary. Love Always, Joey." Admiring the silken calfskin sheaths, Chaz felt a knot of remorse in his gut. It passed momentarily, like acid reflux. His wife had class, no doubt about it. If she only hadn't been so damn observant. In exactly 6 hours, he would report her missing. Chaz stripped to his underwear and lobbed his clothes in a corner. Then Charles Regis Perone set his alarm clock, laid his head on the pillow, and went to sleep. The Gulf Stream carried Joey northward at almost 4 knots. She knew she'd have to swim harder if she didn't want to end up bloated and rotting on some sandbar in North Carolina. But Lord, she was tired. To take her mind off dying, Joey composed a mental list of the things that Chaz didn't like about her. 1. She tended to overcook fowl, particularly chicken, due to a lifelong fear of salmonella. 2. The facial moisturizing cream that she applied at night smelled vaguely like insecticide. 3. Sometimes she dozed off during hockey games, even the playoffs. "Come on," Joey thought. "A guy doesn't suddenly decide to murder his wife just because she serves a chewy Cornish hen." Maybe it's another woman, she thought. But then, why not just ask me for a divorce? She didn't have the energy to sort it all out. She'd married a worthless horn dog, and now he'd heaved her overboard on their anniversary cruise, and very soon she would drown and be devoured by sharks. Suddenly, something heavy and rough skin butted against her left breast. Thrashing and grunting, she beat at the thing with both fists until the last of her strength was gone. Then the screen in her head went blank. At heart, Chaz Perone was irrefutably a cheat and a maggot, but he had always shunned violence as dutifully as a Quaker elder. Nobody who knew him, including his few friends, would have imagined him capable of homicide. Chaz himself was somewhat amazed that he'd gone through with it. When the alarm clock went off, he awoke with the notion that he'd imagined the whole scene. Then he rolled over and saw that Joey's side of the bed was empty. Through the porthole, he spied the jetties that marked the entrance of Port Everglades, and he knew he wasn't dreaming. He had definitely killed his wife. Chaz was dazzled by his own composure. He reached for the phone, made the call he'd been practicing, and prepared himself for what was to come. He gargled lightly, but otherwise made no attempt at personal grooming, dishevelment being expected of a frantic husband. Soon after the Sun Duchess docked, the interviews commenced. First to arrive was the ship's solicitous security chief, then a pair of baby-faced Coast Guard officers, and finally a dyspeptic Broward County Sheriff's detective. Meanwhile, the Sun Duchess was being combed from bow to stern, presumably to rule out the embarrassing possibility that Mrs. Perrone was shacking up with another passenger, or worse, a crew member. "Exactly what time did your wife leave the stateroom?" the detective asked.
3:30 in the morning, Chaz said.
The specificity of the lie was important to ensure that the rescue operation would focus on the wrong swatch of ocean. The ship's location at 3:30 a.m. would have been approximately 70 miles north of the spot where he'd tumbled his wife overboard.
"And you say she was going to scope out the moon?" the detective asked.
"That's what she told me."
Chaz had been rubbing his eyes to keep them red and bleary, as befitting a hungover, anxiety-stricken spouse.
"I must have nodded off. When I woke up, the sun was rising and the ship was pulling into port and Joey still wasn't back. That's when I phoned for help."